good time we're having here, right here on the All Elite Wrap-Up. Tom, you can tell by his face over there, is excited to be here. We are happy faces. Remember when they taught us in radio, Tom, you lean forward, you put a smile on your face, and you move the pronunciation to the front of your mouth, and whatever. All right, so.
I've always been told that I have a face for radio and a voice for print, so. It has always been that way for me. So, you just accept it at a certain point. You don't fight it, right? You know that.
Concur. Yep. Anyway, Tom, we had so much wrestling this week. I'm excited to talk about it. We had AEW Revolution, which means we had Sting's for our retirement match, and we had Dynamite. We're going to get into all that stuff. I'm excited. But is there anything new on the Tom front?
Right there. Do you see that?
Yeah.
There's Super Bowl 54. There's Super Bowl 57. There's Super Bowl 58. Got that done while I was on my vacation to New Orleans. If you are from New Orleans, shout out to your city. If you've ever wanted to go visit New Orleans, I would say go do it. The food was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I would say the caveat, be cautious if you go to the Museum of Death, because I found out the hard way it is not exactly what you think, at least not what I thought. So, Tim, what I thought the Museum of Death was, is, do you remember the show on like Spike TV or whatever it was? It was like 1,000 Ways to Die. And it was like, this person ate a soap bar and he died, right? Like, I thought it was that, right? So okay. I was like, oh, man, that's so crazy.
This will be interesting, unique ways that people have died.
Brother, it was not. First thing I can remember seeing, Nicole Brown Simpson's throat slashed, which it was not like a slit. It was like, if this is her throat, it was like cut into here. Like, it was gruesome. Then you see JFK's head, like autopsy, just with his fucking brain out there.
Real detailed with.
Oh, and then they're playing a 60 minutes interview with Dr. Kevorkian just on a loop. Then they're showing you like the Waco, some guy had a t-shirt that he was wearing at Waco that was like in the thing. They show you the Unabomber shit. Like, I was like, what the fuck is this? Again, when you go in there thinking, isn't that weird? This person died by too many blueberries. Nope. It was all the worst kind of murders in the world.
That's rough.
It was jarring.
Yeah, that is jarring. But I mean, you still had a fun trip, and that was at least.
Oh yes, I'm just saying I'm just saying with that. If you see that and you go visit New Orleans, buyer beware, because it was not what I thought.
Yeah, do a little research first, is what you're saying.
Yes, yes, don't go definitely. But yeah, we saw a Pelicans game. Pelicans beat the Pacers. That was fun.
You could have slapped hands with the players too. You were up there on the floor.
Yeah, we were fourth row. Hey, so I FaceTimed you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, hey, did you see what happened right before we ended our call?
No.
This jackass behind me spilled his Sprite on me.
Oh, geez.
And then, like, he did this. He goes, I go, is this yours? And he's like, uh-huh. I was like, so, and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll clean it up.
Yeah.
And I just, oh, what a jackass. But he was a nice guy. He was young, and his parents probably bought him tickets. But yeah, we were fourth row, got to see Zion. I got to see Halliburton, all the fun athletics of the National Basketball Association. Then we did some other tours, things like that. But now we're back. Like you said, we saw some great AEW action, Revolution. We got a new Dynamite to talk about. We got so much to talk about. But Tim, as we like to do on the show, if we hear from the... It used to be called Table Nation. I don't know what the new. The wrap up regulars. Sure. Let's call it that. We'll play that first.
The wrap up regulars. Yeah. We're saying to you is you can influence this show. You can have your voice heard if you have some thoughts. Oh, my goodness. Speak of the devils. We want to hear from you. You can do that by getting in the chat, like we have some friends right now in the chat. And what do I say by chat? If you're listening back to this on the podcast, shame on you. Shout out Dak Draper. We love you podcast listeners, but you should be live stream viewers as well. And if you do that each and every week on Thursday at precisely on the dot 7, what does it say, 28, You'll see us live, and you can influence the show, right? You can talk to us via the chat. You can send us an email also, though, if you're not going to join in the chat. You can send that to aewrapup@gmail.com, and you can send us a handwritten email, right? Handwritten, typed out email, excuse me. Or you can send us an audio clip or a video clip, and we'll play that too. And one of the folks that's in the chat right now is one of our regulars who sends us a video clip almost each and every week, and that's Ash H. I don't know if he's been in the chat since the rebrand to the All Elite Wrap-Up, Tom. He's in here with one of the Jeffs, which we're big with Jeffs, right? We've considered making this the Jeff podcast and just marketing exclusively to Jeffs, but we won't do that just yet, right? Because as we see, we've got some other folks in here. Jeffrey Sill says, what up, boys? We back. The boys are back. Revolution was phenomenal. Dynamite was fantastic. And the WWE chuds are big, mad. Okada is All Elite. Thank you, Sting. Ash H says, hey, we in here. I've literally never been in here live. This is mad. That's a good thing. And then Jeffrey Sills again says, Ash up in the chat. And that's exciting that Ash is in the chat because he's going to get to watch live his own call that he sent to aewrapup@gmail.com. Tom, I'm interested to talk about this one. I'm excited. It talks about, I'll display it. You can find out.
All right, boys. What's good? Good to be back here. You know, good to spend some time with my boys, yet me. Anyway, first things first. Let's get into this. T-Mac, for you, I've got Sean O'Malley. I've got Dustin Poirier. I've got Kevin Holland. I've got Jack Della Maddalena. And I've got P.O.E. on. And I've got Francis Ngannou. What you saying? Okay, cool. That's out of the way. When do we pull the trigger on Swerve, boys? Because it seems like we're turning babyface and then we're going to do a bit more of a chase kind of thing. But like the idea is when we're pulling the trigger. Because I feel like there were a danger of him getting, I don't want to say stale, but him just getting like boring and, you know, maybe the weight becomes too much and then the eventual title run gets a bit crap as a result. So, I don't know. When do we pull the trigger on him? And what do you think his eventual title run's going to be like? And do we really care about Wardlow being in the title picture? I don't know.
No.
I kind of do. I kind of like Wardlow, but this whole undisputed kingdom shit ain't working for me. It's not working for anybody, so whatever. Anyways, I'll catch you guys next week. Peace.
Nobody likes Wardlow. But, you know, some people, I guess, might like Wardlow.
I don't hate him. I will say I do like the new tagline that he's trying with, like, this isn't going to be a match. This is going to be war. Like, I like that. The sure. idea, because my biggest complaint with Wardlow, and I'll get into my picks with UFC 299 here in just a second, but with Wardlow, and then we'll circle back to Swerve as well. My biggest pet peeve with him is just the, I'm the biggest. It's like, we can see it, man. We can see that you're not, you know what I mean? Cause like, if you take this to like American football, Tyreek Hill can be like, I'm the fastest. Now there may be someone who is faster, but we've seen this motherfucker outrun everyone every game. You know what I mean? So like, obviously there could be someone in AEW that would be bigger than, you know, wrestler X, but when everyone just is aesthetically just, we eyeball test, you're not that big. That's the thing. It's like, it falls flat when it just doesn't check out with me. But Ash did ask about UFC 299. I disagreed with him on some things. I got Chito Vera. Of course, I got Dustin Poirier, DP all the way. I'm going to take Kevin Holland as well. I got Gilbert Burns by submission, most likely. And then I got Peter Yan. And then for the boxing match, man, it would be so fucking crazy if Francis Ngannou, his second ever boxing match, defeated a former world heavyweight champion and former Olympic gold medalist, Anthony Joshua. He did awesome against Tyson Fury. I think it was a lot of like, well, he obviously can't box, and we found out he could. So I don't know if you can, you know, play that same trick twice. So I lean Joshua, but I put $5 down on Francis. So it would be cool, but that's not who I'm picking. But, well, I guess I am picking with betting, but if I had to like really put money on it, I'm going to Anthony Joshua.
Not bad. So now to get on what Ash is saying with Swerve Strickland, I agree. you have to be conscious now of when, right? You draw it out too much longer, you're going to lose it. So mm-hmm. now is the time to formulate the plan or start enacting the plan if you formulated it. You can't be drawing it out anymore.
I've got a theory. So the next pay-per-view we're actually going to, Dynasty in St. Louis, I think this is what I, and obviously we'll talk about Dynamite here in just a moment. Some things that will be happening next week on next week's Dynamite as well, and some collision stuff, things like that. But this is what I think they'll do. I think at Dynasty, we're going to do another triple threat, Joe, Swerve, Wardlow. Wardlow takes the pin. So then Swerve is going to be like, you asshole. You haven't beat me. You beat Hangman. Mm-hmm. He's a millennial anxious cowboy. No one cares about him. You beat Wardlow. He's never won anything in the first place. You need to face me. And then at, I think it's Double or Nothing, the big pay-per-view that they have, then they'll do one-on-one, Joe versus Swerve. Whoa! Because it seems like, again, another three-person title picture.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's good. That would be fine. And I think that might help build up, you know, finally really cement in Swerve. But Swerve's a face now. They don't have to do
fully.
Any, you know, the one thing that's going to be a bit of a thorn in the side of that is this Mogul Embassy. Those other guys can't come along for the ride and be faces. Those guys, nobody likes those other than, am I blanking on his name?
Yeah, Prince exactly. Nana.
Other than Nana, right? Like, but Brian Cage and mm-hmm. the other guys, like, I don't think they're fitting in that regard, but I don't know. You have something?
I do. One of it might be a stretch towards the end, but I think this is how you get out of it. You do Prince Nana with Swerve, right? Every week doing this kind of thing. And then do it on a Rampage just so it makes it some type of like advancing a story, but it's not always on Dynamite. So let's just say Rampage. Have the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage walk up to Prince Nana backstage and was like, hey, man, seems like you're sure spending a lot of time with that guy. Remember, we were the initial group. It was us. So what the fuck, right? And then I would have that, that Mogul Embassy kick out Prince Nana and Swerve, boom, because you want to keep Prince Nana with Swerve,
because yeah.
this thing, right? You gotta keep this for as long as you can, but you can't have him be a heel and Swerve kind of just walk out alone, right? So I think you kick out Swerve and Prince Nana out of the Mogul Embassy. Now, you know what that group would not have? A leader, someone to guide them, someone you may call a father figure, and I'd have Christian and the patriarchy fucking expand. And that's where you can go. Cause after, you know, we'll talk about Adam Copeland and Christian. I think you got to get Killswitch out of this, right? Cause Killswitch is conflicted the entire time. Replace him with the Mogul Embassy. Now that whole group goes after Killswitch. Huh?
I said this last week that Killswitch doesn't fit because everybody else is like a human, right? And it's a family, and now you have this like dinosaur with a weird name. You got to get rid of that. This would be fun because he could go to Brian Cage and be like, look, this already fits. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is already here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cage and Cage.
Yeah, we got cousins, aren't we? The paperwork's right. Easy.
Yeah, exactly.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, so I think you do that because then to keep getting the Adam Copeland Christian Cage kind of matches going, then you could do Adam Copeland and Luchasaurus, right? Because that's where we get the I'm a Dinosaur. You could get them to tag against Christian and Brian Cage. Cage and Cage versus Copeland and Luchasaurus. You know what I mean? Like, I like this.
I think somebody pointed out here, Jeffrey Sills, he says Wardlow has his title chance next week at Big Business. I agree with one of them here saying, you know, you might lose his momentum if you do the same thing at the next pay-per-view, but I think maybe you could even fast track your storyline before the next pay-per-view.
Big Business will be something, but then there's going to be something before
but
that.
But if you're
too,
planning
you
know to double mean? Or nothing, yeah, as long as you measure out and make sure there's things to cultivate the interest and keep Swerve looking hot and, like, just getting screwed or something, I think you can at the same time work the angle of Nana, right? Like, and them sort of kicking those two away from the thing and have it all just merge together as one. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
Because I think the money is the one-on-one matchup with Samoa Joe and Swerve. And again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But if we saw how the way Dynamite ended, I think the main event of Dynasty most likely is going to be Ospreay versus Danielson. So you don't necessarily want like a big title change to be overshadowed by what some would call the dream match of dream matches, you know? So that's why I would say like postpone it one more pay-per-view, or again, one more big Dynamite. It could be even the next Dynamite, right? Call it, I don't know, winter is over or whatever, and then do it there. You know, all those fun
spring
things.
Forward.
Yeah, spring forward. Lay back. You're dead.
Yeah. Interesting to see where we go with Swerve. He is on fire, and we will talk more about it in both of our next points of topic coming up after we talk about Sting. Man, Sting.
Yeah.
Fuck it. By the way, everybody else, if you're listening, you're watching, you can do what Ash did. Send us in an audio clip, a video clip, just a regular email, aewrapup@gmail.com. We are on Threads, @all_elite_wrapup, which is tied to our Instagram. But check out allelitewrapup.com for all the links you should need. And of course, that's where if you subscribe, which is free, then you'll get all the notifications telling you like, hey, we're going live tonight at precisely 7:28 on the dot every week. So, Tom, Sting is retired. He said, I know I said this before, but this time's for real. This time is for real?
Yes. I don't think that Sting has been a person that kind of backtracks. Because even when he said he retired at the WWE Hall of Fame, he said, you know, the only thing sure about Sting is nothing is for sure.
Yeah.
This time around it was, no, this is it. And so the verbiage was also different. Yeah.
Well, he also has not shied away from basically saying, I didn't like how they treated me over there. And I don't want to give them the thing, right? Like, I don't want to give them the honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, treat him like shit. And I 100% agree. Now, with this match specifically. So, yes, I think we're on the same page there as far as this was Sting's last match. I kind of feel like, as you know, Sting is in my top five all-time favorites. Love him. He's in that four spot.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan, Angle, Shawn Michaels, Sting, Taz. Those are the top five. But anyhow, my personal favorites. Not saying they're the best. Anyhow. But man, what a classic Sting match to get overshadowed by something else. Like every major Sting moment, it feels like it gets overshadowed by something else. So we think of Starrcade 97, and you don't think of the match. You think of Hogan doing some bullshit at the end, and then Bret Hart saying he submits, flat fuck, whatever the hell that was, right? Like that match is defined by that finish. You even go back to 88 with the keep talking about in Greensboro. That was really Ric Flair. Is he done? Is this the train? Like it was more about, is it over for Flair than is it Sting's coming out party? Right. And we could keep going on and on. Sting has countless moments like that, but this is what I was honestly a little afraid of with a tag match is in my mind, that match is defined by Darby Allin's backflip into the glass. Right. And so, damn. Again, it was great. It was fun. It was enjoyable. But what did you think?
Well, first of all, yeah, I thought it was an awesome match. And I mean, I said it on our Threads. I was like, who amongst us correctly predicted there would be panes of glass in Sting's retirement match? Mm-hmm. Kudos to Sting. When everybody always puts out all the things, right? All the Sting variations, and they're like, which is your favorite? Unequivocally for me, it is AEW Sting. AEW Sting has been far and away just blow me away with everything he's done. You know, even when it got, I've criticized at times, I'm like, this is repetitive. Why is he hanging out with this dork Darby Allin? Why is he doing these things? But like Sting at 60 plus years old doing the things he's done, and you can see every time in his eyes, it is for pure unadulterated love of the game and the feedback mm-hmm. he gets from the crowd. Like he's living on that high. And I mean, how can you be anything but fucking appreciative of that?
Yeah, I agree with you. This time around, you know, the greats always talk about living in the moment. It felt like the entire 3 years, Sting was living in the moment as far as I'm going to enjoy this. And then especially when they said, hey, this is my last match, he really seemed to really take in a lot of the moments that he had leading up to Revolution. So again, I thought the match was fantastic. There were great Sting callbacks. I thought the Suns dressing up as different iterations of Sting was really cool. They can't do a Stinger splash to save their life, which I get. They've probably never done it, but learn it from your dad. No, I'm kidding. Credit to the Young Bucks. This show has a long history of me not liking them, and I have grown to begrudgingly respect them. And I will say they did really good in this moment. They had a lot of good Young Bucks bullshit that they, especially as we talk about Dynamite, kind of built upon. So I do appreciate that, all of what they did. I didn't need Flair in there, right? Getting a super kick. I didn't necessarily need, and Steamboat, I love Ricky Steamboat. I love Ricky Steamboat, but I don't think of Ricky Steamboat and Sting as like a team. You know what I mean? Right. So they're great, and I bet you they may have been friends, but like, and I know his health wasn't as good, but if he could have, Lex Luger should have been in that spot. You know what I mean? And obviously he's in a wheelchair, so he couldn't have, but, and obviously you could have done a Kevin Nash, but WWE, which, side note, let's talk about that real quick. No respect for them.
Yeah.
This is the dumbest thing that they did, where people were like, credit to WWE. They, at every step leading up to Revolution, said, no footage. You are not using any of our footage, which, again, you're advertising on another person's show. Why wouldn't you want it on there? And then two, none of our legends, air quotes, are going to be there. So no Kevin Nash, no Lex Luger being seen in the crowd, none of that stuff. But then we're going to applaud them and say, oh, look at the changing of the guard, because Michael Cole and Pat McAfee were like, hey, that was a pretty cool Sting. Good job. Like, suck it, man.
And I think I saw somewhere that, like, and who knows? Again, all this, I don't know whose side is, who knows what, whatever. Somebody said WWE was never actually asked for any footage, which, okay, then fine. But they did, from what we're to understand, is say, because Kevin Nash said this, they told him Luger, he can't go. You know what I mean? Like, and then look, anybody that's basically on one of these legends contracts, which, by the way, do you know that what those amount to is not a whole lot of fucking
money. But sometimes, if you're not doing anything, you know what I mean? I do get
Kevin one Nash checks, give him, but like, but that's also his avenue to probably, because he owns a majority of the NWO name for merchandising. So that's probably his avenue to sell in there. So, but yeah. I mean, but the thing is, like, their reasoning was, they don't want people seeing him because he's associated with WWE, so then it might be confusing, right? They might think this is associated with WWE. Nobody, casual fan who hasn't watched in a while, sees Kevin Nash and goes, oh man, I know he works for WWE right now. That means this place is connected. Guys, dumb. That is the dumbest thing I've heard. Nobody's fucking thinking that in their mind or putting those two connections together like that.
And to kind of further that point, no one old enough is thinking that, right? Our age is thinking that. Anyone younger, no offense,
doesn't know
who the hell he is. So that whole argument of they might get, no, you are just being a cunt. And so just say what you are. Because for Vince McMahon being an asshole, which he 100% is, at least he'd be like, yeah, no, I'm an asshole. This is ruthless. This is how you're supposed to be. It's like, you know, you're not, but at least you're owning it. You know what I mean? So, again, another thing
they've done before was like work a deal. Like they sent Christian over to an event one time in exchange.
Yeah, because Ric Flair went into Hall of Fame.
Fucking do something like that. Be like, all right, well, let us fucking borrow somebody for a fucking thing or something. It's weird. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But like I said, Sting, I thought, had the perfect way to end it. Apparently, he wanted to lose. If you were, believing reporting, it was the Young Bucks and Tony Khan were like, fuck that. No, you're not. So again, whatever. It was picture perfect. And, we'll talk about the pay-per-view in our Dynamite wrap-up to kind of touch on some points there. I also thought the rest of the pay-per-view was very, very good.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I like the pay-per-view a lot, and particularly with Sting. Like I said, he was never my guy. I always thought he was good, and I understood he was one of the top folks. But Jeffrey Sills in here, he said Sting was the first wrestler that made me a true wrestling fan. And I know he has that effect on so many folks. So seeing this, and I think they did a hell of a job with the package, even without some of the footage, right? There were no TNA footage in there either. There was no, WWE, WCW footage. And they still managed to put a lot of stuff in there and really give you a good feel of the breadth of Sting's career. And you could just feel the energy in that room. And it being the Greensboro, you know, Coliseum or whatever that's called was amazing mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah,
that was cool. And let's just roll into the rest of Revolution. By the way, any regular listeners know that we do a competition on these picks.
Do we?
We like to score who does better on the picks, and the loser is bestowed with a gift of wearing a shirt of the best pro wrestler of all time.
It's a Jeff.
Jeff Jarrett. And I know Tom is thrilled to announce that he is now attempting to hide it, but he is wearing, look at that. Look at that beautiful Jeff Jarrett shirt. And this is the fun thing that I love to point out about this one is because, you know, the first time we did this, we ran into a tie and we were like, geez, we need to enact a tiebreaker, right? And so we said, whoever won the last time gets to pick out of all the things we picked different, they get to pick a tiebreaker. Well, I'm happy to announce that I think for the first time, one of us won by a tiebreaker. And it's the tiebreaker you selected and you got wrong. So,
you know, look, I'd like to do this in protest, but I'm going to be a team player and wear the damn shirt, Tim. But you kind of asked me when I'm eating beignets down in New Orleans, having time of my life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, pick a match. I don't know. Sure. Mm-hmm. The title match.
I was like, you didn't go with Tony Storm. Oh, no, but we both picked Tony Storm. That's true. It had to be something we picked different. That's right. Yeah. Yep. Which you didn't know, but we did pick that one different. So I just took your answer. I was like, all right, I'll take that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, how now? And then you won. How convenient that happened. Oh, and then all of a sudden you won the week I'm out.
Hey, listen, that Jeff Jarrett shirt might have made me learn something from Jeff Jarrett. Yeah. Who knows?
Arnie piece of shit. Yeah.
Who knows? But it looks good on you, Tom. It looks great. Looks like you're feeling wonderful.
Itching. We talked about this yesterday. So we are going to the next AEW pay-per-view. Usually the loser has to wear this shirt when we do the picks for that pay-per-view. I might be wearing this fucking shirt at the pay-per-view. So we'll see how that works for you.
What if we get it signed? Let's get it signed by Jeff Jarrett.
I have the observation about Jeff Jarrett that I'll share when we talk about Dynamite that I just think is very, very interesting from like a macro type of thing with AEW. But hey, let's get into AEW Dynamite. Last night we got, I guess we're calling again, I understand seasons where it's like, you know, visually it's different, but like it never stops. But anyhow, I think we're calling this a season premiere, but we get a new theme, new colors, new logo. So before we even talk about the show, what do you think about that presentation of AEW?
I like it because it is back more akin to their initial color scheme, right? They are slightly different in the presentation of it and the display mm-hmm. of it. It's more of like a splatter than before. It was like a fireworks kind mm-hmm. of a thing. But I do like the color scheme back. You know, the two companies, this NXT and AEW, when they seem to be on the same level, they kind of flipped, right? Like AEW was colorful and then NXT was black and gold. And at one point they flipped and then, you know, NXT went back and I'm kind of like, I think the feel is more, AEW feels, like I've said, more like a party each time and it feels younger and hipper and it feels more colorful. NXT is a Triple H thing and it feels more like we're leather and we're motorcycles and we're smoke machines and, you know, mm-hmm. that feels more black and gold to me, right? So I love it. I don't love that I just rebranded this show and now I got to work on the fucking new color scheme. So that'll come in a few weeks when I find some time for that. Thanks, Tony. You could have clued me in on that, but you know, we'll get there.
You know,
we'll get there.
I thought it was good. The reason I like the new color scheme specifically is with the black and gold, there's only so many things you can do with t-shirts and things like merchandise, right? But when you have 63 different colors, I mean, shit, you could have a tie-dye of purple, a, you know, pink starburst thing. It's like, so there's a lot of different options that, like, if I like blue, for example, I could wear the blue shirt. If you liked orange, you could wear the orange. So we could all look different, but all be supporting the same thing. I think it adds a little bit more individualized merchandise for fans and also again for the company. So I like that part. The song, I'm going to be completely honest with you, I didn't really hear that well. Well, I didn't hear it that well and I haven't gone back to really listen to it. So I can't really comment, but it seemed not that different than the normal one.
Yeah. It seemed not as different and thereby not as good. Like I thought the other one was fine. So if you're going to be similar.
Well, that's the one thing that I thought was interesting is when I did read that they were going to do a new song, I thought because Tony Khan is not afraid to pay for licensing fees and we got Collision Elton John, I thought maybe we were going to do something with a Little John or,
Yeah.
Fat Joe or Rick Ross, someone like that.
Which isn't a bad idea because that's, again, a song people recognize. So it might make them pause more if they're not looking for the thing, right? If they're kind of channel surfing or flipping through. But, I don't know how common the channel flipping is these days. I don't know if that's a thing anymore. Is that an old guy reference? Channel surfing and stuff like
Maybe.
that?
Well, here's the thing with me. We don't have channel numbers, so it's
Yeah,
just
exactly. That's what I
so
mean. So
yeah, I
even when
can't.
you're surfing, you're not really seeing each thing as it comes on. You're looking at a
Yeah, you're just
name or
looking at the name.
something.
Yeah. Oh, did
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
And so
So
maybe that's
anyhow.
how,
Right. But let's talk about last night. A great Dynamite episode. And it is started with, as mentioned from the video from Ash and talking about the pay-per-view, this guy right here, Swerve Strickland, the coolest guy in pro wrestling. And Tim, this is exactly the moment he fully embraces being the babyface. I mean, this is almost paint by numbers. I should have won it for you guys. Thanks for believing in me. All that stuff. So, what did you think about Swerve kind of moving away from the I'm a bad guy, but you get it to hey guys, we're in this together. What do you think about that change?
It kind of has to happen. He has to embrace the crowd. I don't want him to lose some of what we were liking about it, where he was doing some shit, some dirt, right? Like he was getting in there and breaking into houses and you know what I mean? He's sinister. Slit your throat. So I don't want to lose that. Austin towed that line pretty well when he did the famous like bad guy is now the face, right? You have to still bring that energy because being the coolest guy in pro wrestling and the coolest guy in the room, he's still going to be that. So that demeanor and that swagger is going to be there. But then you start running into the territory, like you always said about Roman Reigns. You're like, I don't empathize with this guy or even like connect to this guy. Like he's gorgeous, he's rich, he's got, you know what I mean? Like what? Like he's fucking super cool. I'm none of those things.
Yeah,
I
like what
want
the
him to
hell?
lose. I want him to
I
like
don't
get
like
knocked down a
that. That's what
peg,
I'm,
right?
yeah. If I can't be it, I don't want him to be successful. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I agree with you as far as Swerve. I do think though it was finally a good time to at least acknowledge it. Say, "Hey, I hear you guys." 'Cause that's the one thing that I've kind of like when Britt Baker won the championship and then she continued to go heel even though we were cheering her each and every week. And then they finally did the baby face, but I felt like the steam was off of the push with her. At least this time we're like, "Hey, I hear you." So, we're good there. So, Swerve Strickland is over here. He's talking about how he's going to win the championship, damn it, because he needs to do it for him, he needs to do it for you, and so he's going to do it. Well, then here comes Samoa Joe, your AEW champion, and he's like, "Hey, you're a bitch. I'm the
It's kind of what he
champion."
said. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, "I don't know why you think you're going to be champion. I'm still the champion. Suck it." And so Joe kind of punks him.
Didn't he say he's like, they're gonna forget about you in like 6 months or something, or
Yeah.
6 weeks or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, so then Joe and Swerve say let's fight tonight. And then here comes the Undisputed Kingdom. What'd you think about their arrival?
I really am getting a lot more nauseous at this Undisputed Kingdom, and I'm going to say why, right? Because we've said, what the fuck are they doing, right? So I get the idea of like, well, here they are, right? Now they're in the mix. But you keep doing that under the guise of like, guy sitting there with a bum wheel, the real star of the show there. So he's saying, Wardlow's gonna win and then he's gonna bring it home, and that's a hell of a storyline. If I thought you were gonna in any way pull that trigger, but I have seen nothing that makes me think that as hot as Swerve is right now, as good as Samoa Joe is on the storyline they're on, that Wardlow is suddenly gonna like, I'm the champion, and now we're gonna play out this Adam Cole Wardlow thing, right? That's not happening. So now it just sounds weird and out of place and messing up a good storyline.
I agree. I think a story that would hit a little bit closer to home or better for me as a fan would be just them being jealous of, we're tired of hearing about you two. This is about us. So step aside. We're taking over. Because, yeah, they are alluding to Adam Cole saying he's going to give me the title stuff. And that's, I don't know. I would just like him to say, like, we don't want you two to be a thing anymore. You've had so we're going to stop it. Yeah, exactly.
You had your chance. So, Wardlow's never had a chance. Get in there, Wardlow.
Exactly. Then, yeah, something like that. And even I think Wardlow can play up to the fact that, hey, Samoa Joe, I beat you up and I'm going to beat you for that title this time. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Awesome question here in the chat. Is the Undisputed Kingdom Retribution 2024?
No.
Not that.
With Retribution, because Retribution, I can't even remember who the leader was. Right?
I don't remember a name. Cole. I mean, I know like Donovan Dijak was T-Bar or something like that. And then
maybe. I literally the thing that I think is the really the biggest, you know, turd in the punch bowl for the Undisputed Kingdom is that Adam Cole is hurt. If Adam Cole is healthy, I think they're taking off way faster, you know, doing a lot more things, but they're kind of, you know, slow rolling it until Adam Cole can get going. And that sucks for the fan, but I think that's what they're betting on is once he's healthy, oh, all those plans we had, we're going to pull the trigger on. So we'll see if that actually happens or not.
You know, before we move on, Ash here in the chat, he says Retribution was bad. Undisputed Kingdom ain't far off. Because I did the show last week alone and I threw it in a day early, Ash had sent in a clip and I didn't get it in, you know, on last week's show, but he brought up, he's like, why Undisputed Kingdom and the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, why aren't these guys beefing? Like the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, both of those groups were fucked over by the Undisputed Kingdom, and that's kind of why they're friends now. Why aren't they trying to fuck with them? Like, why aren't they in each other's shit?
Well, when we talk about Bang Bang Scissor, that's you want to talk about Undisputed Kingdom being bad. This Bang Bang Scissor Gang is worse, in my opinion. I don't like seeing them. I don't like hearing their music. I don't like when they're trying to do things, like, you know, to get over a phrase or anything like that. I think they are worse than Undisputed Kingdom.
Jeffrey Sills brought out, I remember Swerve called him Dr. Claw. He called Cole Dr. Claw. And man, that murdered him because that's so perfect for that. Like, that's, God, people should be chanting that when he comes out. Ash brought up a good point, too. He says, who the fuck cares about Taven and Bennett?
Well, you're supposed to. but you're supposed to, right? Because the thing that I will give them credit for is I don't like any of them.
Yeah, don't like a single one of them. I don't even like Adam Cole right now.
I don't want a shirt. So, like, as a heel, good. You know what I mean? Because I don't think another
cool... It
feels
Vicky Guerrero heat, doesn't it?
To a certain extent. I just think that if you had another cool heel, now you're fighting time with Swerve Strickland because it's kind of the same spot.
Let's rewind the clock a little bit, too. At what point did Vicky Guerrero heat become what we now know to be like Dominic Mysterio heat, where it was like we disliked it at first, but now we just enjoy the booing of it. We kind of like it because we want to boo you now. You know, because like I liked the Vicky Guerrero at the height of the booing time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I was like, yeah, we got to fuck with somebody now. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, I don't know. That's always a weird dynamic, right? Like we hate you so bad. Bo Dallas comes to mind, right? Like we hate you so fucking bad right now. And then as we're hating it, we're like, let's keep this going. We like this. stick around. Let's keep hating you. But that ain't happening here with the Undisputed Kingdom.
No.
At least not yet. And I just am ready for them to find a way to, you know, WWE wasn't always wrong when they used to pretend something didn't happen. And I kind of wish we would do that with this one.
Again, I think once Adam Cole's healthy, if it's still not enjoyable, okay, but I don't think you can say, hey, we got to stop because we can't do it. It's like, man, just let him get healthy, right? Again, it's not necessarily in their control how someone's ankle breaks or whatever it may be, but let's get back to the show. So,
but I feel like they've got a problem though. Four of those guys have no charisma.
But that's good. Like, I think that's good in a heel, right? Like, hot take. I think Rowdy Piper fucking sucked. I think he sucked in every iteration of Rowdy Piper. Every time I saw that asshole, I was like, get the fuck off my screen. You ramble. You don't make any sense. sometimes you're racist and paint yourself half black.
Yeah, I've never considered him like, when people are like, who are your favorites? I've never been like, oh, Roddy Piper was great at the
end. But what I'm saying is, I kind of, now, not to that degree, because I'm not young anymore, but that kind of like, I don't like him. That's how I feel about Undisputed Kingdom. So I think it's good. It can be good. But let's talk about the match. So they pull a WWE here, and the Kingdom then wrestles Samoa Joe and Swerve, which I did not. Why? I don't. No. Undisputed Kingdom challenged them. I get it. But at one point, one of them, Joe or Swerve, sort of like, no, we'll take you on one-on-one.
I thought that's what they were doing with Joe, because when he first brought up, he's like, I'm here, he's here, let's do it. Joe was like on the ropes. I thought he was going to be like, piss off. Right. Like, I ain't here no more.
Yeah, because, and this honestly made the Kingdom look even worse in a different way of like not even being credible. So Joe kind of struggles with the match, and then Swerve tags himself in and just runs through him, just like a knife through hot butter, just whoop, we're done. And they win. And that's the end of the match. Now afterwards, Wardlow walks down. He's like, oh, and Swerve's like, what's up, bitch? Like, let's fucking fight. And then Samoa Joe gets him in a choke, chokes him out, and essentially is staring down Wardlow. What'd you think about that, alluding to the fact that, which we talked about earlier, I think it was in the chat, next week at Big Business, Samoa Joe versus Wardlow for the title?
Yeah, I mean, I like that move by Joe, right? He was like, look, I teamed with this dude. I didn't want to do it. We're not friends. I'm getting ahead of him because he's fucking, you know what I mean? He's talking shit on me. He thinks he's going to come after me. I'm going to show him what's in store for him. And as you're walking down here, you're getting a quick sneak preview of what's about to be in store for you if you take another motherfucking step. I like it, right? Love that. And that's very on brand for Samoa Joe. I just don't want it to be Wardlow. But we're here, and we're going to move forward with it, and Joe will be Wardlow.
Yeah, well, or it could be shenanigans. And that's where, again, I think we could get
but
triple
Wardlow's threat. Not walking away with the title.
No. Wardlow's eating the pin, but we don't, again, I don't know how that happens, but that's what I think will eventually be the outcome. All right. So then we go backstage, and in a waste of a segment, Jericho interrupts Hook. Mm. I was like, Hey man, basically I'm paraphrasing here, but this is what it felt like. He said, hey man, I like you. Isn't that fucking cool for you? What'd you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it sucked, and we're going to talk more about it as we get later into Dynamite. Ash right here says, going to bed later, boy. See you. Yeah, because Ash over there is over there in England, right? UK? I don't know exactly where you're at over there, Ash. What is it? 1 in the morning? 2 in the morning over there? Something like that? Burn the midnight oil for here for the All Elite wrap-up. Yeah, he said, oh, wait, Tony, he hook away from Jericho. Yeah. You know, Hook has a match here later, and I don't want to necessarily spoil what you're going to talk about there, but, like, we need to keep – I'll talk more about it after the conclusion of that. But, yes, we need to keep Jericho away from Hook, and I'm not here for this.
Yeah. And a little bit of character work, though, that we get before Hook's match with Brian Cage. The Young Bucks are backstage, and they just totally shit on Tony Khan announcement style. And they're like, hey, we have an announcement, but the announcement are going to be 2 announcements later tonight. Credit to them, because one of the things that I think you could definitely say was some bullshit is they're always punching at WWE. Mm-hmm. So it was good that they're at least self-aware that their company sometimes also does some dumb shit.
Right.
So I like that part of the Young Bucks. What did you think of that quick interview segment?
I love it. And, you know, the Young Bucks are, again, heavily featured right now on AEW programming. And I know this is a sidebar, and I know they're not going to do it, but I implore them right now, it's time to change the name. The EVPs is a great tag team name. You're Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. Think Mick Foley here, right? We know all these characters and we love them. Dude Love, Cactus Jack, Mankind, and Mick Foley. And like, we remember Mick Foley for the Hall of Famer and the, you know what I mean, top 20 or better, you know, wrestler of all time. You don't need to maintain the Young Bucks name for like, posterity or whatever. Drop it. The EVPs right now would be home run name for this gimmick that you're doing. You can even call it the Elite VPs. Like, you could do some play on words or something, but let's drop the Young Bucks thing. But they are killing it with this. This shit is awesome. And they need to lean into every bit of it, right? Like I said, let's start telling people there's dress code violations, right? Like, tell people how, you know, like, Renee, you're supposed to stand on the left during the interviews. I'm sending you a fine. I'm sending an email about this, right? Always send an email about this or something, right? Like a something like that. Like, just, oh, lean into it so hard. And yeah, every company, I don't care if anything gets in the news about any wrestling company doing something stupid, make fun of it, including your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I thought this was a good parody of Tony Khan. But then we get back into the ring, and like I said, it was for the FTW Championship. Hook, right here, as Hook. You're seeing on the YouTube stream, took on Brian Cage, which they have some history from being Team Taz, and then also having their own history kind of fighting each other.
Over the belt.
This is fun.
Brian Cage held the belt.
Yes, Brian Cage was the first one to hold the belt. I will say this. It was a cool finish with Hook holding on to the submission, even though he got thrown into the thumbtacks.
Yeah.
But guys, are we just making thumbtacks like a chair shot now? Like, that's where that could have been great if for Hook's pay-per-view match, that's the finish. But for the second match of the night on a Dynamite in early March, I don't know if that was a good placement for it.
Yeah, same. And I just, notwithstanding what happens in the fallout, I just was sitting here thinking, I was like, this is really the best we're doing with Hook? Like, we keep trying to make Hook a thing, and we think, like, I know what it is. Let's put him in the ring with Brian Cage. Like, nobody cares about that guy. Like,
I like him. I think he's like what Wardlow wants to be.
Yeah, but nobody's like, oh no, Hook has to fight Brian Cage today. Like, it just,
I think aesthetically, it works as a feud. And we'll talk about post-match. So Hook wins, Gates of Agony come in, they beat up Hook. So then we kind of put a close the loop in the professional world. Sometimes you say Chris Jericho then comes out and fends off the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage. Here is what I will say about that. As a fan, I don't like it. I don't want to see Chris Jericho take another young wrestler, this time being Hook, before it was Sammy Guevara, then it was Action Andretti, like all the right, and try to keep going. However, this is where I think house shows would benefit them so much. Because at a house show, if you told me for the first time ever, Chris Jericho and Hook versus Gates of Agony, great. And then breaking kayfabe, Hook can get some like, oh, so when the crowd isn't responding, I can do what Jericho does here, like that kind of stuff. But when you're only doing it on television, I just don't think that works. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think Chris Jericho, I want to give Chris Jericho credit for a career ability that he had for a very long time. Chris Jericho used to be very in touch with what was hip and cool to pro wrestling fans. And Chris Jericho was that for longer than most people did as he aged, right? Like, most people his age, as he went along, was still more in touch than most people his age. But I think that's gone and has been gone for a couple years now. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's evidence when we see Chris Jericho talk about things online and on here, he no longer really knows what's cool. And he's missing on some of it, right? Like, I just don't know. Hook, the one thing Hook has solid is cool. Mm-hmm. And this ain't going to help that, right? Chris Jericho ain't going to enhance that at all. Chris Jericho might be able to enhance a bunch of other things, but he's going to hurt the cool. And that's a problem.
Well, and then the other thing that I think is not working in Hook's favor is, you know, like I said, here's the action figure. This is cool, right? I got the title. I'm eating my chip.
Yeah.
Got my sunglasses on, whatever. But this is partner number 80, it feels like, for a loner, right? Because before this, it was Orange Cassidy. And before that, it was Danhausen. And before that, it was with the whole Best Friends. And now it's with Jericho. It's like, just have him go. Be on his own.
Well, and what else could this amount to? Again, let's think forward. What is the heights that we could reach with this? Tag team championships? Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to see Chris Jericho as a tag team champion. We don't even want to see Hook as a tag team champion.
No, it's like, going to be Jericho versus Hook. That's what it's going to be. Jericho versus Hook.
So they're going to lead this into a feud, and Jericho thinks he can like get something out of Hook. But what, again, what has Jericho said and done to a young kid that he's going to come up with something new, different?
But I don't think it's that. Again, I think it's in the the live reps, where again, I think a house show would benefit Hook, where it's okay, I could be told, for example, if I'm losing the crowd, stomp on the stairs or whatever, right? But when I need to actually do it, that's a different story.
This can't come with Adam Copeland. This can't come with, you know, I understand the veteran, let's get him in there with a star who's been the top level to show him those ropes. Mm-hmm. But like somebody that is still a little more able to perform in ring.
Yeah. And
B,
I agree.
Cool still. A little, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I agree. All right, let's keep it moving.
The goddamn Christian Cage patriarchy thing is waiting for Hook with Taz hanging around there too, right? Like, you could be like, you're fucking, you had a shit father. And Taz like, excuse me? Like, oh God, that could be so funny.
That's a great idea. Put a pin in that. We'll get to it in here in just a second. But we go backstage and it's announced that we're going to have a new tournament for the tag team championships because, as mentioned at Revolution, Darby Allin and Sting defended their championships. Sting retiring means that Sting's not going to defend those titles. And then Darby Allin says, I'm not going to replace Sting. So we're going to.
How could
give
I
him
replace
up.
Sting?
Right.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Which is great. And we'll get into Darby Allin in a moment here. Then after that announcement, Orange Cassidy is with the Best Friends. And Renee is like, hey, so Orange Cassidy, you lost your international championship. What are you going to do now? And he's like, I still want championships in my backpack. So that's what I want to do. And the Best Friends are like, hey, Chuck's still hurt. This tournament's happening now. Why don't Trent and Orange Cassidy, you guys team up together? Now, Tim, I will ask you this. We have mentioned plenty of times on this podcast, Trent and Orange Cassidy kind of have this weird side-eyed friendship. Do you see anything coming about from this tournament between Trent and Orange Cassidy?
I don't know about this tournament, but yeah, I liken them to, and any fellow listening or watching may have experienced this at some point in their lives. Some point in your life where you had a large group of friends that hung out near daily, and one of the people you didn't really like you would not miss at all if they were like, oh, they had to move away, I'm sorry. But they were part of the friend group.
So Anthony Dooley.
You know what I mean? They were still the friends, and you still did the thing, but like, if it was like nobody else could hang out but this dude, I'm not hanging out tonight, right? Like
Anthony Dooley. That's how it was for me. Yeah. I fucking hated that guy who was best friends with my two best friends. It was always the four of us. Hated him.
That's what this feels like to me. And it feels like they've been leaning to try to do that. We're like, we're part of the crew, right? Like, but pal, we ain't. Mm-hmm. If these other fools weren't hanging around here, right? Like, if you weren't boys with my boy, we just wouldn't be hanging out. Nothing personal, maybe, but like, I just, you know, you rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. So we'll see. But they are announced for the tournament to crown the new tag team champions. So we'll see what happens from there. We go back to the ring and Killswitch, or Luchasaurus, I'm a dinosaur, runs through Matt Menard. It's not even close. He just, you know, wears him around like a hat for about 2 minutes and that's it. And then they're going to beat up on Daddy Magic. Daniel Garcia runs in and he's like, you ain't beating up on my best friend. And then the patriarchy is like, yeah, you know, here comes Christian, the TNT champion. And he's like, what do you think you're doing? It's me. What's that? That's my fans up there. We're going to beat you up, Daniel Garcia. And so then he is like, hey, look at that. I won. I'm great. And out of nowhere, Adam Copeland. And he's like, bitch. And they run for longer than I expected for two old guys, like all the way to a card that Christian stole, which I thought was great.
Multi-talented individual, Christian.
Yeah. What did you think about the post-match shenanigans, I guess we could call it, with Adam Copeland and Christian Cage?
I guess I forget every time it happens. I'm like, oh yeah, Christian and Adam Copeland are still like feuding and fighting over this thing. Kind of forget they're doing that. Weird. I feel like this hasn't hit the way they thought it was going to hit.
I think it did. I think they may have messed up though, going a little bit too far. I think when Adam Copeland beat Christian Cage, right there, that's the end point. When Killswitch then choke slams him, but then still goes back. And now we're just going to blow past that as if that never happened.
Yeah.
That's where we went just a touch too long. Cause the go fuck yourself, I thought was awesome. The Christian saying, "Hey man, I always wanted to be like your brother." And then Adam Copeland saying, "Go fuck yourself" to him. They did some pretty good stuff, but yeah, it's just a touch too long.
So gosh, keep this family thing going with Christian Cage, right? I would even, like we said, we run the kill switch is the bastard child to the ground where he finally, you know, runs away.
I'm a dinosaur.
From home, right? That's how Christian can refer to him forever. He'd be like, ever since kill switch ran away from home, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just whatever, like, let this family down. You bring Jack Perry back to, like, you know what I mean? Because Christian be like, you're not a dinosaur, you're a man, right? Like, you can run that into the ground, then take him away. But have him, you know, other people, like we said, he's finding other people, he's bringing them along, he's abusive father, right? And then when one is starting to, you know, get our sympathy and he's starting to get beat down and we've long forgotten about Adam, that's when Christian's like, I know who's going to help me. I need to call in your Uncle Adam. And Adam comes in, now he's a heel and he's fucking, you know what I mean? He's Uncle Adam. He's in the, right? He's Uncle Adam. Yeah.
I like that idea. I do like that idea. Mm-hmm. Side note, have you been paying attention online? I haven't been watching live, but what Jack Perry's doing over there in New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Now I've seen,
the scapegoat?
I haven't seen it lately. Yeah, the scapegoat, right? Yeah.
I don't hate that.
Jeffrey Sill says AEW has aftermatch promos from Dynamite and Daddy Magic has a fantastic one. Dude, I've seen some great promos from that dude in those sort of behind the scenes, you know, or after. Yeah, I'm going to go check this out. I think that dude can do a lot more. I've been wondering, like, if maybe he couldn't go, but I mean, he wrestled here. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, those post-match videos are amazing. The one that I would definitely tell you to see, Tim, is there's one in the trainer's room with Eddie Kingston and Brian Danielson. Eddie Kingston has a really good 20 to 30 second monologue. And then Brian Danielson goes for about 2.5 minutes. And it's so fucking good. It's one of the rare times, I'm saying this with all due respect because he is the GOAT as far as promos. I think it's one of the rare times that Brian Danielson did a little bit better than Eddie Kingston, which I think was by design, but it was that good. Right. That's what I'm telling you. It was that good.
Jeffrey Sills also says AEW is killing it with the YouTube. They have a lo-fi music with old dark matches playing along. He said someone is taking chances and making good space of the YouTube page. I'm going to have to check that out.
I didn't even know about that. Look at that. See what you learned in the chat? Join the chat.
This is why we need you in the chat. We need you joining in. If you can't join the chat, send us an email with that information if you know it.
Definitely. All right, so we go backstage, and hey, at Revolution, Kyle O'Reilly, in I guess the clothes that he last wore when he was healthy, came out and was like, I'm in Revolution.
Yeah, and we haven't seen Kyle O'Reilly since what, 2022, September 2022, I think it was. And has he slept since then? Did they fucking pull him out of a bender? What the fuck? The dude had I've got backpacks smaller than the bags under this guy's eyes. What was this? He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. Like, what is going on here?
Well, then here at this, and then here at this promo on Dynamite, he just goes, "I'm medically cleared and I'm gonna wrestle." Okay.
So why did you show up looking like you were, I'm crazy. I'm gonna fuck somebody up. Now we're hugging. Now I'm telling you I love you.
Or a whisper.
After I looked at you crazy. After I looked at you crazy for a few moments. And they all just stand around wondering, like, fuck was that about? Also, what a way to, like, poor Roddy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just, I know he's a heel, so fuck him. But, like,
yeah.
Weird turn of events. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, now let's
Friend
get
of the show,
into...
Kyle O'Reilly.
Friend of the show. Doesn't understand why we wear masks. But you know what? Fuck him. That's why. At least we... When we have a discrepancy in our face, we cover it up. I'm like his fucking old ass face. But we'll get to that when we get to it. Hey, let's talk about the big moment of the night, right? The second biggest moment of the week behind Sting's last match. Young Bucks are out. Tony Schiavone calls them out. And they say, Sting's sons, they're 6'8". They're 400 pounds or whatever. They cheated. We didn't actually lose. Fuck them. We're going to get the titles. But now let's get to some business. We got two announcements. First announcement, Hangman, who did beat up referees at Revolution, you're suspended without pay. And at that point, I was like, so are they going to like toe the line of like now kind of like doing the hard thing, but then still doing selfish things, right? But then the second thing, a part of that first announcement was, hey, Kenny Omega, you're not showing up to work. So yeah, we're kicking you out of the Elite.
And he said, you're fired. And he said, sorry if you have to hear it this way. And he's like, a matter of fact, and he's like, I know you are.
Yeah, but he was fired from the Elite. He didn't say AEW. Right. He said from the Elite. And so here they are. They're doing this disingenuous, sorry, guys, got to do the hard thing. And then here comes the Mad King himself, Eddie Kingston. And he goes, I'm fucking tired of this. You say I'm going to get suspended for what I say? Here's some fucking money. Throw it at you. And suck it, right? And the EVPs are like, hey, it's 2-on-1, Eddie. So we're going to beat you up here. And they do. And then they're about to do their EVP trigger, which, again, should be their name, EVP. And all of a sudden, you hear some coins dropping. Da-da-ding, right? Now, I didn't know what the fuck it was, but the crowd did. The crowd let me know that this was a big deal. And up at the top of the ramp, which we've seen him in AEW in the past, Kazuchika Okada, or I'm just going to call him Okada because I don't really know how to say his last for first name. Nailed it. Stands up there and is like, Young Bucks, I'm going to get you. So up until this point, what did you think of the announcements with Kenny Omega and Hangman and then Eddie Kingston, Okada, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, good stuff, right? Again, Eddie Kingston versus the Authority is always good. So if we're going to have Eddie Kingston be, you know, one of the, you know, the protagonists against the EVPs, then great. I didn't right away know what the coins were, but you know what I mean? Yeah. When Okada comes out, I'm like, okay, I think we were hearing downwind that Okada may be coming to AEW. So, you know, it's a thing, but you know, I'm on a wait and see, and you know, more to come. Obviously, we get into a little more here.
Yeah, so he comes down. Now, the details are what is what's great about this is because Eddie Kingston dressed like Eddie Kingston. The EVPs are dressed like EVPs, not the Young Bucks, but like EVPs. Okada comes out, and now the new set is the tunnels. And if you pay attention, heels come out of the left, babyface is coming out of the right. We did not see Okada walk out. We just saw him on the ramp,
right?
Arms open, and then says, I'm going to come after you. Well, then he gets in there, and this motherfucker, I tell you what, Tim, you want to get on my bad side super fucking quick? You mess with my king. And he took out Eddie Kingston, and motherfucker, I tell you what, Okada, I tell you what.
You got a very stern message for him on Threads.
Yes. If I see you in face, I'm going to give you a how's your father. So the EVPs then say, guess what? Okada's in the Elite. Now, I learned this after the fact from the great fans of the AEW, who, if you don't know something, will make sure you're a fucking idiot and you need to know it. Kenny Omega's biggest rival is Okada. So what the Young Bucks did was kick out Kenny Omega and replace him with his biggest rival. Now I know about the matches, but I thought they were kind of friends, so whatever. So what did you think about that, and what do you think about Eddie Kingston in the mix and all this stuff?
Interesting that Eddie Kingston's in the mix, and now we have this Okada thing, and Kenny Omega's gonna be involved then at that point, you would think, provided he can come back, but or maybe that's just down the road when he can, so it's just there to, you know, thumb in the face. So the Okada thing, man, we got when they're paying him a lot of money, and
no, really.
Yeah, like to the tune of $4.5 million a year. And that's where I'm a little cautious because, again, guys, you're talking about American wrestling fans here, and if there's no storyline around it, the matches are going to be cool for a few moments, but I don't know that you're going to get a lot of, you know, let's keep them coming back with this. And so, look. If you think you're going to sell enough merch and everything, he's going to pay for himself, then so be it. I mean, I'm not a business owner, you know, in that regard. So, fine, you know, your decision. But, that's a lot of money for this guy who, sight unseen here on American television for the most part.
Yeah, what I will say, the two things I do like is, one, the Young Bucks, or EVPs, I think right out of the jump will be the talking piece for him, right? So he doesn't have to get cut promos until he's kind of ready to cut promos. So credit to them for thinking about that. The second thing, and I think this is actually very good because he doesn't actually have to do a lot of heavy lifting to make a good first impression, is making him a heel and going with Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston can cut a promo on my coffee mug and you'll want to see the match, right? So obviously I know his reputation, Okada, that is, of having good matches. So if Eddie Kingston does the storyline part, I might be in. So credit to them for understanding, like you said, I didn't know about that number, but if you're going to pay him that much, man, you set him up with like the best case for success with Young Bucks as this EVP doing his promos, and then then Eddie Kingston doing the first rivalry. And like you said, I think then the second rivalry will be Kenny Omega, and they'll have their eighth match or whatever it is.
What do you think it would take for us to convince Eddie Kingston to do a weekly segment where he cuts a promo on an inanimate object chosen by our fans?
I mean, I don't know, but he did that one time on the YouTube series. Remember when he had the cookies, when the Young Bucks were like, hey, cut a promo on these cookies. And he's like, these cookies, I love you.
That's what I mean.
But I can't have you right now.
People can send us suggestions. We'll draw one out of a hat and Eddie Kingston comes on for, you know, minute and a half, cuts promo on it, whatever it is.
I mean, it'd be great.
Love to do that.
Yeah. I love Eddie Kingston. He is my favorite wrestler of all time.
Best friend.
He is my best friend. So this is the point I wanted to make, and this ties into this t-shirt. And one point I wanted to make as we go into the women's match and then go into the main event. Think currently about this fucking AEW roster. This may be the most diverse roster I can ever think of.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you have Ibushi, Okada, and Ospreay, and Omega. You also have Edge, yeah. Christian, John Miro, Moxley.
Yeah,
John Moxley,
yeah,
and then at the same time, Chris Jericho, Jeff Jarrett, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same
Big Show,
time,
Mark Henry are on the payroll.
But then at the same time, you've got Eddie Kingston, and then Daniel Garcia and all these younger guys. Now, Eddie Kingston isn't younger.
Well, you've got
guy,
all
you know
the
I mean?
CMLL. Like, you got your Commanders, your Vikingos. You've got your, you know, all those.
You have Penta.
Penta.
And he's not even.
Yep. Yep.
Good night.
Of riches for this organization. Yes.
Now, here's my ask. And this is just because I still think there's money there. He could obviously do your AEW match that all the hardcore AEW fans want. The matches to be 10 stars or whatever the fuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think before his career is over in AEW, you have to do a Penta title run. Alex, whatever hype man could do his promos. Obviously, he's cool as shit, right? He could be just as cool as Swerve. That's another guy. You have Samoa Joe, Hangman, and Swerve. That's the three people I forgot. And they're in the main event picture, right? You know what I'm saying? But Penta, you got to do something. I want to see Penta against this Okada. I want to see Ospreay versus Penta. Penta, man. Penta. Don't get him lost in the shuffle. He's the fucking man.
I agree.
Same with Rafe Mendes.
Awesome. Yeah, he's awesome.
All right. So I just wanted to say, like, this is an incredible roster that I don't think has ever been this across the board with different types of talent that you've seen. So we get back on track here. We get Tim, it's right before the main event. So we go old school, even though it's a new season. Tim, you know what time that is.
I do know what time that is.
It's time
for the right before the main event.
Before the main event.
I feel like it's been a while. So, you know, maybe we cut Tony Khan some slack. It's been a bit.
Yeah. But here we go. We got Chris Statlander in the match here with Rio. Stokely Hathaway coming out with Chris Statlander. Another fucking person who turn up the TV timeline.
Big Stoke. Ooh!
I fucking love them. And this was an interesting match from this perspective. We're doing our typical AEW women's match stuff. Boom, 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 boom. Chris Statlander gets to a point where she's kind of at a stalemate with Rio. So then Stokely Hathaway goes, hey, here's some, I think it was a chain. I'm not exactly sure. Here's a chain. Use it. And she doesn't. So what did you think of the match? And then what do you think about this finish where Chris Statlander loses to Rio?
Yeah, the losing to Rio. I think they may be starting to lean into something I was trying to suggest. So thanks for watching, AEW. Yeah, let's get Stokely into like, hey, I can take you to the next level. You just got to do things my way, right? Like, let's get you away from this. Like, because again, you can tout her as like, look at her. She's a stud next to these other ladies, mm-hmm. right? But she's just not hip to the game, right? And this is where she needs, you know what I mean? You know, she needs a little devil on her shoulder, right? Like, she needs somebody saying, hey, you know, there's shortcut exists over here. And, you know, if you got a little more ruthless over here, if you didn't give a fuck about what they felt over there, you could be champion.
So after this, we get a backstage segment with Stokely Hathaway and my favorite female wrestler, Willow Nightingale. And it kind of seems like it may be not Chris Statlander returns to the dark side. Willow kind of seemed very willing. She's going to be facing Rio next week to be like, no, I'll do that. She didn't say it. She didn't explicitly say it, but her body language let you know, well, if you hand me the chain, I'll hit her in the face. A corrupt Willow Nightingale? That might break my heart.
Great. Could
that
be
might
great.
Break my heart, Tim.
Yeah. Could be good. Could be real good. Oh.
You know who could bring her back to the good side? Eddie Kingston. The most grumpiest man. Think about it. The grumpiest man in pro wrestling goes to the happiest woman who is corrupted. And it's like, hey, I think your personality's bullshit.
This ain't right. This is pissing me off that you're so angry.
But like, this isn't you either. Yeah. So be that annoying bitch. You
it
know what I
be
mean?
Like, you're the only thing that was pure and actually fun in this goddamn thing. And now it's pissing me off that you're not. My one goddamn smile each day. Yeah. And you're ruining it. Knock it off.
You were the only one in catering who didn't get up from their seat when I walked in. Like, and now you do? What the fuck? Yeah. You know?
And they only told me nice hoodie. You know what I mean? Everybody else is shitting on my hoodie.
I think you need to pair up Eddie Kingston and Willow Nightingale at some point.
Grumpy Eddie Kingston trying to get people to be less grumpy would be great TV. Great TV.
I know. All right. So then we go into the ring, and here comes Darby Allin. And he talks about he's going to relinquish the title. He also says next week at Big Business, he's taking on Jay White. And then I think in a shoot moment, breaking kayfabe here, but in a real moment, I should say, almost breaks down and is like, hey, that could be my last match next week because I'm climbing Mount Everest. And I could legit die. And if I do, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I want you to know, fans, like, you guys are awesome. What'd you think of that part of all of this?
I remember thinking, I was like, well, I hope you don't die. Like, that seems more power to you, I guess. Some people have some goals and they really want to achieve some things.
Or test themselves. And I get it to a certain extent, but like, I don't know about that one, man.
So here's what I know, right? I know some people can, right? So I know it's humanly possible. So therefore, I know could quite be possibly for me a human, right? But I know a lot of people try and a lot of people die in trying to prove that. And I don't feel that I need to prove it that so much to myself that I should risk dying for it, right? That's the difference between me and a lot of some of these people, I guess. Their drive is different, I guess. I don't know. Yes, I could see why that would feel like a great, amazing accomplishment that so few people can accomplish. But is getting that accomplishment worth your death? Seems weird to me. Like, it seems weird to me. Because I don't hold the people who did it in such high esteem that, like, if they walked in the room, I'd be like, oh, my God. That's one of the 4,000 people who've ever climbed Mount Everest. You know what I mean? Like, who gives a shit?
Well, yeah, because it's not breaking a record, right? Like when people wanted to be, you know, in the machine that broke the sound barrier or something. I get that, even though I wouldn't have done it, but like, okay, but this, like you said, is still very impressive, but you're not the only one. You know what I mean? So that's where it's like, are you really gonna, you got something good happening. You just had this insane spot with Sting, and now you just want to, because I don't know. But Jay White, walks out. And he does this thing where I think he's like trying to be like a coy baby face by saying Atlanta every time, but he's like, I actually kind of fucking hate it here. And
who does? They go,
I live there. I know. I was there for a while. And so he does this thing, Jay White, that is, where he says, you know, you're basically overrated and I'm the shit, which then Darby comes back and says, hey, I've heard all these great things and I've seen you win titles at every other place, but then you've came here and what have you done? Nothing.
Nothing. Jack shit.
And Tim, I want to get your reaction, but I do want to say one thing about that. That is my sentiment to every new hire at AEW.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You could have told me Eddie Kingston is the shit and is the man. Now, I obviously knew a little bit because of his relationship with Sharkbait and Evolve, but what I'm saying is, when he showed up at AEW, he then had to do the thing, and now he's Eddie fucking Kingston. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to just jump in head first because you tell me this person was cool over there. Awesome.
Yeah, they got to be cool here for me to care. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that's where I don't like that. Like, I think Darby spoke a lot of truth in that little sentiment back to Jay White.
I think Jay White is he seems very intelligent, right? I think he's very witty based on some of the, like, the language he uses and some of his insults and stuff. Like, I think he's good in that regard, right? And he definitely is super comfortable in his presentation and what he does, right? Like, he is very much, like, got it locked in and who he is, whatever. But I think there's a lot of value in that for smarmy, sinister heel, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever this is, ain't it. Which even it was towing the line, right? We're trying to make them, everybody loves the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, but then he's out there kind of fucking with Darby Allin? Like,
yeah.
It's weird.
Well, let's take a quick side quest on the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. Because one thing that I think was legit that they're trying to make into a story is Max Caster messed up on one of his raps, right?
Yeah.
But then I think he did it again, but now I don't think that one was legit. And so I think what they're trying to potentially do is the Acclaimed are going to say, hey, we tried this thing. It's fucking nope. Cause we're not here, right? We're all distracted doing other stuff. We need to get back to doing what we're doing. So see ya. And then that's when the gangbang gang is like, fuck you. You don't leave us without us saying it's okay. And then they have a feud. Maybe that's what I was thinking that they do.
Yeah. But that's where I think it's leading. But I said, and I think I said this last week, like, I don't really care about that either. Like, I don't.
Well, they got to do something with these trios titles. Yeah.
Both of them can be got, man. One trios titles for both, and you can use them on either or AEW or ROH. That's what I've said the whole time. You know what I mean? Trios titles that go across. Oh, even lend it to NJPW for once in a while. You know what I mean? I don't care, but just make it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need each. There is no AEW trios division. Can I be real about that? Like, that it's not a thing.
Well, there could be, but there's not enough TV time. That's my thing. Is, as I mentioned, with all these. You know, because people are saying, for example, Jay White is being buried. It's no, he's not. There's not enough time because look at all the time we're filling right here. And I didn't even mention Tim, quite possibly their best talent in the company's history, MJF, right? When he comes back, he's taking TV time. You know what I mean? So
here's I also need with it, though. Like, again, yeah, we haven't even really built a tag team division. So, again, if I'm looking at this as, you know, we're in kayfabe world, I'm watching a professional fighting organization, right, run by a bunch of fucking sociopaths, but watching it, and they have a singles division, and then they've got a twos division, and now they've got a threes division, What we're blending, what's a faction, what's a tag team, what's a trios, and especially when they're not marked as such, right? We don't have trios where all three guys are a name and they have, you know what I mean, like similar gear. Same thing with a lot of the tag teams. Like, it's hard to identify. It's branding stuff, right? Like, it's reaffirming stuff. Like, we don't see any of this. There's not a whole lot of connection. So, yes, we could have trios matches where we get, like, Commander, Vikingo, and some other guy face the champs. But are we really giving a shit about that? Like, I don't have any reason to think the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn are fighting against these other three guys who are a regular team with each other. And, you know what I mean? And there's other teams that are also competing for that spot. Like, at any given time, it feels like we have two sets of trios. Whoever the champ is and whoever they're in a storyline with.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the tag division, going back to Revolution, I think with this tournament, I think the one that's going to like reignite the tag team division, it's not the Young Bucks. I think it's going to be the Blackpool Combat Club. I think John Moxley and Claudio are going to be like, remember how we're the fucking coolest badass motherfuckers here who come out in the LOD spikes? We beat FTR. We're fucking everyone up. I think that's what they're going to potentially do. We'll
Jeffrey
see.
Sills says, and his last thing he says here is going to spur us into another topic. Trios was good when you had Death Triangle, the Elite, and House of Black. We missed two promos talking about throughout the show tonight. We got a Julia Hart promo where she had, you know, spooky, you know, dark blue sky back there with her. Mm-hmm. And she cuts a promo, which was fine, right? It was actually, you know, it was messaging. It was like, hey, here's my intent. Like, you must have forgot who I am, bitch, right? Like that kind of stuff. And they're spooky and they're dark and they're hanging out in the dark. And that's fit. That's on brand. And then we go to commercial. And we come back, and we go to a promo with House of Black, with Julia Hart hanging in the middle. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why did we get one promo with Julia Hart, and she's got her, like, person? So then why isn't Sky Blue with her in the House of Black? And why did we cut to, like, why wouldn't this all just one, you know what I mean? Like, they could have all cut a promo, and then she could have been like, oh, yeah. And also, like, it was weird to me that was the, like, the order of operations for all of that. All of the individual pieces were fine, I felt like. But it was just weird that those were like back-to-back, right? Like just sandwiched around commercial break.
I think I still, you know, talking about that storyline specifically, I actually don't hate right now that Sky Blue isn't with the guys. I kind of feel like it's Julia Hart's like pet project. Like, don't even pay attention. This is just my thing. You guys do your thing.
And that I can wrap my brain around too. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not a member of the House of Black. She's just one of the fucking people I'm fucking with. Cause I'm, you know what I mean? Right.
Yeah. Cause I wanted to, it's kind of fun. Yeah. And then, the House of Black, they mentioned that. So Julia Hart mentions that she is going to do an open challenge for Rampage on Friday night. Right. And then the House of Black, talk about how on Collision, which we didn't talk about, Mark Briscoe tried to burn the House of Black members to death with pyro.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're going to fucking die for that. That was crazy. Him actually trying to like hit the buttons and stuff. That was cool.
Well, yeah, we got Jay Lethal saying he was going to help out Mark Briscoe from that too.
They alluded to, and if you recall, after the unfortunate passing of Jay Briscoe, Mark Briscoe's match was with Jay Lethal. So it was obviously, you know, established that these two guys are real friends and then also kayfabe friends. You know what I mean? The thing about that, though, is so Mark Briscoe's like, all right, then it's me and you, Jay, but that means it's 2-on-3. You better not grab that Jeff Jarrett motherfucker.
Yeah.
And to Jay Lethal's credit, he goes, hey, we're in Atlanta.
We're going
if
to
anyone
war.
Knows an Atlanta street fight, it's that old bastard. Don't worry about him, but we'll fight him.
He said, he's like, hey, we're getting ready to go to war in Atlanta street fight. He's like, why wouldn't you want to have like a slimy, you know what I mean? Like conniving, evil. Like he basically was like, why wouldn't you want that on your side? Like, I get it, but like right now you need that. And so like, don't worry about it. I got him. So that'll be interesting. And I love that they just openly shit on Jeff Jarrett. That's fun. That's fun. By the way,
always.
What you wearing there, Tom? Look at that. Yeah.
An off-center Jeff Jarrett shirt. It's off-centered.
I'm still surprised by that. Every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this fucking shirt is
off-centered.
I almost want to order another one to see if it was just that one or if it's like every one of them.
It's probably this one just for being a prick. He probably made it, asshole.
Yeah, he's like, oh, those fuckers ordered it. Yeah. He's sending you these guys.
All right, so
there's a big middle finger in there somewhere if you look hard enough.
Yeah, it's on the tag here. All right, let's get into the main event, which didn't make sense still, but I'm going to say it's okay. And it's Kyle Fletcher versus Will Ospreay. Now, Will Ospreay made his official full-time AEW debut against Takeshita, Don Callis member versus Don Callis member. At Revolution, it was pretty clear that Don Callis was like, Takeshita is actually my favorite, but Will Ospreay is actually kind of winning, so that sucks, mm-hmm. right? And then last night on Dynamite, kind of felt like, well, Kyle Fletcher is a tag guy, so obviously that's why Will Ospreay is winning. That's what Don Callis was saying mm-hmm. on commentary.
Yeah.
But I
mean, we're getting there. Will Ospreay's too big for this group.
Yes.
And we're getting there.
I just don't know why we did
it to begin with. Like, why was Will Ospreay in this? Like, I just don't.
Yeah. Well, I get it because they wanted Will Ospreay versus Jericho at the Wembley show. Yeah. Okay, whatever, right? Tim, this is where I don't know how long I can be like an AEW faithful, because I think at the heart of what the hardcore AEW fan wants and what I want are two different things. Because to me, the match at Revolution was fine. But because there was no story, I didn't give a shit.
Did not care. Yeah.
Didn't care. And all the false finishes made me go, oh, they're going to keep it going. That's about as invested as I got is, oh, well.
Can I get this from folks that are the type that, like, Americans who watch New Japan, don't speak any Japanese, don't watch any subtitles. They're just like, I love these matches because they flip all over the place, and they do. And there's so many false finishes, and there's all the choreographed, like, you know what I mean? I tried to hit you and I ducked under, and then I swung back and you ducked under, and then I tried a Russian leg sweep, but you dodged that and all that. Like, just what you said. All of that stuff serves to make me go, no pinfall is ever the actual pinfall. I'm looking away. You know what I mean? Like, none of it matters. Yeah. I don't have to. I'm just going to wait till I hear the ding. And oftentimes I've also found the people who do those matches too, when they finally do the pinfall, it's always in something that was less impressive on one of the ones that they false finished.
Well, so that's my next criticism. That's my next criticism about this is, this almost feels like a Kane Dewey. Remember Mick Foley in ECW when he saw the sign and he's like, I'm not doing this for you. All you guys are wanting is, now he was talking about hardcore wrestling. I would argue he could do that promo today and just say, you want false finish wrestling. That's what I call it. But it's flips and shits is a meaner name, mm-hmm. but I call it false finish wrestling. Tim, the moves that Ospreay went through at Revolution and even last night at Dynamite are not good for your health.
Yeah.
And guess what? Kick out at 2. If you're going to do the shit in the match, because your health, like the wrestler's health, is not worth it for me as a fan to be like, so, you know, Undertaker, for whatever, you know, your opinion on him is, his criticism of like, you've set the bar here, you can't go back below because that's what the audience expects now.
Well, that's it. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I keep looking at these folks in bewilderment because they're like, it's amazing. He did a triple spinning over your ball sack plancha dive. And I go, right. Like he did last week when he had a match with another person, and he did the week prior when he had a match with another person. And the week, like, when is it no longer like, yes, it's impressive. Yes, I can't do it. But when you show it to me 4 times in a row, the 5th time I'm like, what's on TikTok? Like, that's why you don't keep doing it at such a pace, as they've said, because you have to keep upping the envelope to get that, whether you realize it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But are you fans really watching this and never reaching that bar? Am I the only one? Is that some sort of neurodivergence? Are you guys every time going, wow? And then he does it again, and you go, oh, wow. And then he does it the 745th time in a goddamn 4th fucking meeting with the same opponent, and you go, wow. It never fucking tires for you? Like, That's weird to me. I don't, am I different than everybody else?
Well, so my criticism more is, again, this is all fantasy fighting, right? This isn't real, but let's just act like it is. Rankings. Not even say it's UFC. Just say it's a, like, this is a real world. I wouldn't think, Tim, that the guy who struggles in every single match is the best one.
Right. Yeah.
That's where, like, if Ospreay is fucking the, because what we're doing is two different things. What you're saying is, hey, break kayfabe, but this guy puts on great matches.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're not supposed to break kayfabe. But then you're saying, but in kayfabe, he's the best. And there was conflict. Because when you say, hey, Ospreay, like if Ospreay goes in the ring, it's like, at Revolution, I'm going to give you the best match ever against Adam Cole. It's like, so what are you saying? Are you saying you guys are just going to do false finishes and we're going to fucking think it's fun? Or are you saying, in kayfabe, I'm going to kick the fuck out of this guy?
Right.
Because I need more of you kicking the fuck out of someone for me to think you're great.
There's that. Yeah. And I'm not advocating for a bunch of squash matches when you say something like that. But when we talk about storylines and stories in pro wrestling, it is not just wrestler A and wrestler B are going to wrestle at a pay-per-view. What is the story of why they're wrestling? There is also stories being told on character work, right? If Will Ospreay is better than 95% of the roster, in 80% of his matches, if he's in facing one of those 95%, we better get the feeling that, like, it was never really at risk for him.
Yeah, because I always say mixed martial arts, and I get some people are like, fuck that, we don't want to see that. Okay, cool. Hey, guess what? Fine. Let's just take movies, for example. Go to the movie Bloodsport. The fucking bad guy didn't struggle until he went up against Jean-Claude Van Damme, right? He killed Jean-Claude Van Damme's best friend. Drago in Rocky IV killed Apollo Creed. Like, because they're these juggernauts.
Not for nothing. Roman Reigns is a big heel right now because he beat the shit out of a lot of folks. And you know what I mean? Like,
well, yes. Yeah. Now his matches are kind of being repetitive. Yeah. But what I'm getting at there is
the concept of the idea, right? Like,
yeah.
Struggle a lot.
Yeah, because Ivan Drago versus Rocky wasn't billed as, oh my God, guys, it could go round and round and you don't know who's going to win. No, it went to, this guy might murder the other guy, and then we're going to see if that actually happens or not, or the underdog can win. But even as a babyface, if you're the underdog, I need to know why you're facing the top guy. Can you beat, like you said, 80% of the roster? Because if everyone struggles with, or if you struggle with beating every single person, I think maybe you need some coaching.
Because then we need to stop telling some that, like, this guy is the best. Then it becomes like it becomes about in-match strategy, right? Like, this guy does what it takes to win, right? Doesn't matter how evenly matched, finds a way to win, right? Like, finds a way to win even through the, you know what I mean? Even though he's clearly equally matched or something like that. But, like, you can't tell that with everybody. So, I don't know, man. It's just really weird that,
I think it's,
I agree with you.
I think it's speaking out of both sides of your ass, where you're saying he's the best because he will beat Bill and the wrestler, wrestler X, right? But then you're saying he's also the best because you're going to get five false finishes where you thought he won and the other guy kicked out, or vice versa. And I'm like, but that doesn't check out, right?
Yeah.
The times that false finishes to me have always worked the best is when they're at equal, right? When it's Rock Cena, or excuse me, Rock Austin, and they're going, and you're like, fuck, Rock kicked out of a Stone Cold Stunner. Oh my God. Right. But if Stone Cold was, let's go back to the Attitude Era. Let's keep it in pro wrestling real quick. If Stone Cold Steve Austin was hitting stunners on Jeff Jarrett, Taz, and all these people, and they're kicking out, well, he doesn't look that fucking cool, does he? And so, like, it's the same concept today in my eyes.
Yeah, and you can have kickouts. You can have, there's a difference between false finish and a bunch of, like, two counts, right? Like, a two count comes when you didn't necessarily finish the guy off, but you tried to see if you could sneak the victory in, right? You tried to pin him after something that wasn't enough, right? Mm-hmm. The false finishes we're talking about is these, right? Where they're like, it's Will Ospreay's finisher from the top after a 20-minute match. Pinfall, kick out. Now we go through a bunch more loop-de-loops and round-arounds and round-around, and then this guy gets his finisher. Kick out. Loop-de-loops, run-around, run-around. Now this guy does his finisher twice through tables. Kick out. And you're like, guys, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, none of it means anything anymore.
Yeah, that's my criticism of last night's match, is it went on a couple beats too long because the back elbow, whatever Ospreay's calling it, a tag team guy kicked out of it. I know he's a Ring of Honor, whatever he is, but if the tag team guy, you're not even finishing off with the first one, then are you that fucking good? Like,
yeah.
Again, like if we were both doing this, Tim, like if me and you were also wrestlers, I would have a different opinion as far, I mean, I don't know if Will Ospreay is his real name, but let's just say it's not. Let's just say it's Jeff England, because he's from England, right? I'm like, dude, Jeff England is amazing at putting together just a random match. That's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
But if I'm telling strangers, hey, watch this because this guy's good, and they're like, but you told me that was his finisher. It is, but the guy kicked out. So why is he good?
Because he's going to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes finisher. Yeah, the thing is, with all of those false finishes, right? Even if you're going to do the thing I said, right? Like, put him through a finisher and he kicked out. Now he put you through a finisher and you kicked out. And you put him through two finishers and he still kicks out. That works in a match as the blow-off for the final thing at the pay-per-view.
Right.
That works perfect. Great. Then it's memorable and it's one of the greatest matches we've ever seen. But when you do that every time you have a match with these folks, no, you're not giving me the best match. You're trying too hard.
Well, yeah. And it's just.
You're trying too hard. And I'm pissed off at fans for rewarding these people for trying too hard. That's where I'm at now. I'm like, you guys are.
Yeah.
You're demanding too much and you're rewarding them for going too hard.
The two Ospreay matches since he's been full time blend together. I couldn't fucking tell you. Now I know that there's that one spot that he kicked out at two because he fucking slid down the turnbuckle or whatever it was.
But again,
but they're all the same.
But again, you went through all of that for me to be like, wow, that was really impressive that you did that to Kyle fucking Fletcher, who I forget exists until they put him on my TV screen.
Yeah. Well, and going back to like breaking kayfabe here, like I said, Ospreay showed off his hip and his like bruising, and that didn't finish the match. You know what I'm saying? So like they're putting their bodies through this enormous hell for spots I'm going to forget about in 4 days. Yeah,
for the first Dynamite after a major pay-per-view, which is usually the like kick up restart. I get that AEW has tried to, since I think the turn back over from Punk's gone and we're trying to, you know, regain what our identity was before, they've gone to this idea of like, what?
No, Jeffrey Sills, this is wrong. No, this is something you are completely reading into. I disagree. Respectfully.
I agree. I know where you're going with this too. Yeah, bring this up.
So he says, Jeffrey Sills in the chat, which we love Jeffrey Sills, says the Poison Rana from the top to the hidden blade should have finished Kyle Fletcher.
Yeah.
But the story is Kyle is little brother. He trained, learned, and lived with Ospreay. Look, and again, I'm going to use a real
nobody
life
told us
example
that.
Here. Well, no. Let's even say they fucking did. Here's where it doesn't check out with me. I got a really strong right hook. Tim, if you lived with me for 10 fucking years, if I hit you with my really strong right hook, it's still knocking you out. It's knocking out the stranger. It's knocking out my best friend. It's knocking out my dad.
Yeah.
Like that's the part.
The one thing it might do is help you avoid it, but that's not the story he told us, right? He didn't try to hit it four times and couldn't because Kyle Fletcher kept outsmarting him.
That is the trained, I know what you're doing. But if you hit me with the thing, it should hurt, regardless of my relationship with you.
I clearly didn't learn enough to not get hit.
I know that, like, I've got, no, man. Like, yes, if the story is what you say in this chat here, Jeffrey Sills, is that he was a little brother, so he learned from him, then he should have never fucking hit it until he does slip up, right? Because a good example of that is the FTR Young Bucks first match for the AEW championships in Daly's place when Dash was like, I'm going to try a big fucking splash because these Young Bucks think they're the only ones that can do it. And I fucked up and I missed it and I lost the match. That is a story that you can tell someone else. Like, so these guys only like mat wrestling. These guys are high flyers, but this guy tried a high flying move and these guys took advantage of it and beat him for it.
Yeah.
But this, we're just making that up. You're just wanting that to be the story, in my opinion.
And what I was trying to say before we got onto this is, you know, I see what AEW has been trying to do. They've been trying to feature longer form in-ring wrestling matches, right? We're getting longer matches, longer chunks of time, you know, on the show featured, and they're putting in things like this, right? It's Ospreay and Fletcher, which everybody seems to accept. They're like, well, that's going to be a banger. And I think this is what we're trying to challenge here. We're saying, but why, guys? Like, you're just applauding their ability to be athletic, which is cool, is awesome, right? Good for them, right? Great. And is a good prerequisite for being a good pro wrestler. I'm not going to, you know what I mean? I'm not going to shit on that.
Yeah.
But this is all it is. We're just getting exhibitions of them flipping around and doing stuff is what we're talking about. The story that they're telling us in this match doesn't add up and doesn't make sense.
Yes, that is what I'm getting at. Is if you want to give longer form stories, you can do it different ways. You can do it different ways. And I even got into a back and forth about another spot that my favorite guy, Eddie Kingston, does. And now it's featured in the newest WWE video game. But this smack me in the chest. Okay, I'm going to smack you in the chest. That's why are we doing it? Why are we suspending our psychology or, you know, kayfabe here to be like, you know, hit me in the chest? I'm not going to do anything. But then I'm going to hit you in the chest. And we're just going to go back and forth. No. Have you ever seen anything ever been like, just go ahead and hit me. And then we're just going to go until one of us falls. That's not a thing. Like, that's not, if you're friends, I get it. Hey, we don't want to get this serious. So smack me in the chest. We're not going to punch each other in faces. Smack me in the chest. Okay. Boom, boom, boom. Right. But if you guys hate each other, why wouldn't I let you hit me in the chest?
Anyway. I was thinking about this Don Callis family and this, like, you know, they keep leaning into this, like, well, I'm pitting them against each other. That's a story you could do. If you had a larger crew of, like, you know, let's say a young upstart wrestlers that he was trying to, like, take advantage of, right? Like, he's trying to farm system the greats or whatever. And he was convincing them, well, hey, when I secure an opportunity for somebody, I'm going to give it to the best of you. So you guys got to show me who's the best. And he's getting like some sick twisted thing out of making them fight. Right. Like, and he's egging it on and he's fucking with them. Right. And then none of them are realizing like he's gaslighting them. Right. And stealing from them and that kind of stuff. That could be fine. Right. That could be cool in here. Right. But that's also not the overtones you're giving us. Right. Like that's not, I need something a little more with all of this.
Yeah. So anyhow, I thought it was a great episode. The Okada reveal was great. Honestly, the Young Bucks were probably the highlight for me. Swerve Strickland, still the coolest guy in pro wrestling. Samoa Joe, the king of all of this shit. Now, Eddie Kingston's the king. But right now, the king of all this shit, more than Okada and Ibushi and Ospreay and Omega and all that, is Samoa Joe. And that's fucking cool.
Yeah, I love it. I am never really disappointed by Samoa Joe, I feel like. Right? I don't think we've ever been like, like he always delivers fucking A- or better every time. Mm-hmm. Fucking love it. Just like our fans do when they're in here in the chat talking to us. And when they send us clips to AEWrapUp@gmail.com, you should do both of those and tell your friend parentheses S about the podcast, the website and all that stuff. But I think we're tired. I think we've had enough. I think we're going to get out of here until we come back next week for another edition of All Elite Wrap Up.